Lucy Worsley is a historian and presenter well known to those who enjoy history documentaries on the TV or radio. As a curator of the Royal Palaces, she also has a keen interest in what buildings reveal about those who lived in them. And this interest lies at the heart of her new biography of Jane Austen, as she told RNIB reporter Claire Carson at the Cheltenham Literature Festival.
Yes, it's called Jane Austen at Home, and the clue is in the title. It's about the different places, the different buildings in which she lived. And if you've seen feature films about Jane Austen's, well, of Jane Austen's novels, you might have the idea that she lived in magnificent mansions. But that isn't the case at all. She lived in a succession of sometimes quite small, sometimes rather depressing houses, a rented flat. And I went and visited all of these places because I think that once you know this, you can get a new understanding of her books, of her novels.
Tell us how you became involved in Jane Austen.
Well, I'm a historian of things. There are historians who work primarily from documents and written sources, but I've always really liked the way that food or clothes or music or architecture can act like a little wormhole to take you back into the past, the nitty-gritty, dirty detail, if you like, of people's lives. And my real job, what I actually do all day, is work as a museum curator. I'm the chief curator at Historic Royal Palaces. So we look after grand royal palaces, but I've always been a complete Jane Austen lover as well. So when I realised that this important anniversary was coming up, this year it's 200 years since she died, I thought I could use my approach as an architectural historian to her life, and I just had the best time doing it.
What was one of the most interesting things that you found out about her?
Well, it's hard to know where to begin, really. I had a sense of this, but I didn't really understand just how financially precarious her life was. So I'm not saying that she lived a life of struggle for food or anything like that. No, she wasn't on the streets. But her family came from a level of society that's called the pseudo-gentry. I quite like this term. It means you want to be part of the landed gentry, but you don't actually have any land. So there's a certain amount of make-do and mend and keeping up appearances. And at this level in society, it's inappropriate for women to earn money. You weren't supposed to just go out and get a job as a woman. You were supposed to marry money, which is something that Jane didn't do. And I think that one of the reasons that she didn't do it is because she thought she could glimpse that maybe it was possible for her to make her living as a professional writer, that she was just beginning to do when, at the age of 41, she died. It's utterly tragic.
But it is interesting that she was going against that which was expected of her. So from the films, like you say, we've got a picture that she's living a charmed life in a big house. But the reality is that she was very hard working and chose to live in a small cottage and work hard and not marry. Tell us a bit more about her relationships.
Well, the crunch moment came when she was approaching what she herself calls the years of danger. So right when you're 27, when you're 28, if you're a Georgian spinster in the gentry, you're getting really worried. You're just about to get left on the shelf. And when she's at this age, she did panic, and she did sort of accept a very good offer from a man who had a proper mansion. He was kind of like Mr. Darcy, but obviously he didn't have Mr. Darcy's kind, redeeming, talented, clever, brilliant qualities. And the next morning, she woke up again and she thought, no, I just can't go through with this. And she broke it all off. So that's the point at which I think she thought, that life, which is expected for me, I'm going to turn down.
Very courageous.
Very courageous. And she ended up instead living with her sister, who, like her, was unmarried. And they had to live on little gifts, little handouts from their brothers, who were working. They were clergymen, they were in the navy, one of them was a sort of landed gentleman. And so they were living on the charity of their brothers in a little cottage, that there they had freedom, and there I think Jane had creative freedom, and that's where she got on and she produced her late great books, which are Mansfield Park and Emma and Persuasion. And I think that there's an underlying message in all of these books, which are on the surface really beautiful, frothy, pleasurable, life-enhancing romances, but underneath the books say, isn't it terrible that women are put into this position where they have to marry money? That's my belief.
So she was possibly quite hard up through her life. Did she have any sense, do you think, that her books would be so successful?
You've got to define hard up quite carefully, because she was never hungry. Her concerns were more like having the right thing to wear, having the freedom to spend her time as she wished, because it was expected that she would spend a lot of time, A, looking for a husband, B, sucking up to rich people who might give her legacies, C, acting as a childminder for her 33 nieces and nephews, which she had. Because obviously, if you've got a maiden aunt, well, you get her to look after the kids, don't you? So she had those kind of restrictions on her life. And this pseudo-gentry thing was one of the reasons that when she did publish her books, she was successful later on in her life. Her name wasn't on the cover, because her family, you know, they weren't totally comfortable with this. So by the time she died, nobody knew who Jane Austen was. She never saw the financial benefits of her brilliance, although she was starting to get a bit of money in.
And made something like £600 through her life?
Yes, her lifetime earnings were in the region of £650. Now, what does that mean? It was quite a lot compared with what she'd had before, which was pocket money that her family gave her of £20 a year. She had to live on that, £20 a year. So 650 sounds like a lot. But when I tell you that for a Georgian professional man, like a solicitor, he would have expected to earn £650 in 6 months.
So how amazing that she is on the new £10 note. Now, there is a wonderful fact about the new £10 note that RNIB was consulted when the note was made so that it would be very accessible and understandable. And the third £10 note ever produced with Jane Austen's face on went to RNIB. First was the Queen, then the Prime Minister, then RNIB. So it's very precious, although even the image that we see on that, I understand, isn't quite possibly the right one.
May I say, I'm delighted she's on the £10 note. I'm really happy that she's there. But there is a sort of delicious irony that I think maybe she herself would have appreciated, which is that picture that's on the note isn't really her.
Scandal!
Well, it is what we would call a sort of airbrushed author publicity photo. That's what it is. It was produced after she was dead. She didn't have any say in it. And people who knew her looked at it and they said, yes, that's a sweet and pleasing face, but it's really not much like the original. And
wow, interesting.
The original, as far as we can tell, does survive through a sketch that her sister made of her. And in it, you've just got a less pretty face. You've got someone who looks... Sometimes she's described as looking a little bit sour in the picture. And I do think she was a very funny, sharp, clever, sometimes bitter person. The sort of person who could have a good laugh about what's happened.
Some of her books took a long time to write, possibly even 10 or 20 years in the making. Can you help us understand why that was?
She had an interesting journey towards getting published. She started out writing to entertain her family. She had all these brothers and a sister. They lived in the countryside. There wasn't much to do in the evenings. So she would write stories and read them aloud to the group. And that's why Jane Austen novels sound really good. The dialogue in them is really good. They're like plays. It's one of the reasons that people find them easy to turn into films, because it's all about what the characters are saying to each other. So you can imagine her performing these stories to her family and honing them over time. And her father, who was a great supporter, when she was in her 20s, he sent off one of these books to a publisher who just turned it down flat. Now, that was kind of a boon, because she didn't, you know, we don't even know that she knew that he'd done this, actually. But either way, nothing came of it, but she went on trying and getting better. So if that early version of her work had been published, she might not have the reputation that she's got today, because she went on reworking that book until it reached its sort of mature form, and it did come into the world after a long, hard slog on her part. And I think that the reasons that publishers couldn't see what was good about her books at first is because they were so unlike everybody else's books. There weren't any pirates in them. There weren't any ghosts or haunted abbeys. They were so novel. They really were novels. They were entirely novel. And that's why it took ages for publishers to see what was good about them. Discerning readers saw what was good about them. But the whole thing did not catch fire until years after she was dead.
I love the image of everyone gathering round, you know, the dark evenings, the fire burning, the candles burning, to hear the stories read aloud. It's something magnificent about storytelling that possibly we lose a bit. Would that have been very typical of her age?
Well, I think it's kind of like, you know, today we sit in the room, there's a television in the corner. So one person on the television is entertaining numerous people through the technology that's available. They were just doing the same thing. One person would entertain the rest through the... And the price of candles actually comes into this. A lot of life comes down to funny little nitty-gritty details of domestic life. If you were pseudo-gentry, like the Austens were, you would not want to burn a lot of candles at night because they were expensive. So you'd light just one, and one person would read, and the others would sit in the dark and listen. And it was frugal.
So how did Jane Austen become so famous if her name wasn't on the cover of the book and people didn't really even know who she was until she died?
Well, after she died, her family thought, we're pseudo-gentry, we need some cash, what can we do? So they brought out, in a sort of collected edition, the novels that she'd published and the ones that she hadn't. And this is the first time her name was on the cover, and then it just grew from there, really.
Why do you think that Jane Austen is still so popular today?
Now, Jane Austen's Victorian readers, these are the people who first really took her to their hearts. They like to think of her as a good little woman, somebody called Saint Aunt Jane, who lived in a village and put together these nice little stories. And this is an image that stuck, and it's an image that is wrong. If you just look at the physical form of her manuscripts, a little bit of her novel writing, a lot of her letter writing, you can see that it's messy and it's passionate and she goes over things. It's sometimes as if she's yelling on the paper. And today what people look for and find in Jane Austen is someone much more like us, somebody who cares, somebody who wants to be professional, somebody who wants to make money out of their writing. And the great thing about Jane Austen is that every generation comes along and they look at her work and it is so infinitely flexible that they find themselves in it. So I'm saying this to you in 2017. In 10 years, somebody else will be saying, no, 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 you've got Jane Austen all wrong. She was like this. This is my Jane Austen.
Do you have a favourite character?
Well, I particularly like the story of Emma, which is it's quite an unpopular Jane Austen book because the heroine is a bit difficult to like. There's something a bit prickly about her. She's quite a proud person. I can't think at all why I like her. Obviously, she and I have nothing in common with each other.
Well, Lucy, thank you so much for talking to us. And I'm sure that Emma would have made a great historian.
She might have done, yeah. She had a very inquiring mind and she was very good at leaping to conclusions, which is a danger for a historian.
Thank you.
Pleasure.
Thanks to Claire Carson and Lucy Worsley. Jane Austen at Home is available in Braille, giant print and as TB24353. Lucy's book, If Walls Could Talk, A History of the Home, is available in Braille and giant print. And, of course, all of Jane Austen's novels are available from the RNIB Library in a full range of accessible formats. For more information, go to rniblibrary.com or call the helpline on 0303 123 9999 and select option 5.